This is an exclusive presentation from Federated Media, Unholstered.
Here we go. It's time for another edition of Unholstered. Welcome on in, everyone. Hopefully you're having a great weekend. It's been a really, really busy week for us here on Unholstered. My name is Kayla Blakesley. I am just one of your hosts.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Captain Sophia Rosales-Gatina. I am with the Fort Wayne Police Department, and welcome back to the show.
This show is all about sharing and telling a lot of the stories that don't get told when it comes to law enforcement. Sophia, I just said it. It's been a really busy week for us for really different reasons, but same reasons. For folks who live around this area, they already know that we lost our mayor, Fort Wayne Mayor Tom Henry. He had a medical complication related to his cancer that he was battling. And so we lost him about a week and a half ago now. Man, it was just such devastating news because he had just lost his wife a couple of months prior as she was battling pancreatic cancer. So just all around, just been really kind of gloomy, you know, really subdued here in the Fort Wayne area. And I know that the chief of police, again, we've talked about this here on the show, but I don't know if people remember this, the chief of police is appointed by the mayor. So obviously you guys work really closely with the mayor of Fort Wayne.
We do. And I just want to give my condolences to the entire Henry family. He was a good mayor. No matter what your political views are, he really did a lot to catapult Fort Wayne and put us on the map. And he was a staunch supporter of the police department, which I could not have appreciated more. When we had civil unrest, he was side lockstep with us. We traversed all of that new terrain together, and he was a really good supporter of us, and I will never forget that.
You know, that's been like the common thread when it comes to talking about Mayor Henry, is that he didn't care if you had a D beside your name or an R beside your name. And I think he and I are perfect examples of that. Everyone who really knows me knows I have an R beside my name. He obviously had a D beside his. And he is on my program a lot. We disagreed a lot. But he always still came back on my program, which is really rare. A lot of politicians won't do that. They're like, nope, I'm out. I already had one beef with her. I'm not going back on that program. That never was the case with him. He always treated me with the utmost respect and vice versa. When I'd see him out in public, hey, KB, how's it going? So on and so forth. And so I think that speaks volumes of him and his character. And it truly was the residents and the community first, and politics was a little bit further down there, you know, on the priority list. So definitely just a champion and a rock star for our community. He will be truly missed. We know that his funeral is coming up this Friday, Sophia. He's also got some visitations. They are open to the public on the 10th and 11th before the funeral on Friday. Does the Fort Wayne Police Department, will you play a role in that?
We will. There'll be a large role played by us. Obviously, you know, he was our sitting mayor, so we will have, I believe, honor guard representation. We'll have pipe and drum. But he was an Army veteran as well, so they will have duties at the cemetery. So we will back off at the cemetery at that point. There'll be probably a lot of traffic when that happens on that Friday. So just be prepared for that. We'll put out information as we can about the route and everything from the church to the graveside. So just make people aware that there will be some traffic issues. This will probably be a large procession.
As I mentioned, we know that the mayor appoints the police chief. But did you have like a pretty regular relationship with the mayor? Did you deal with him often with your role as being a captain of the Fort Wayne Police Department?
Not so much the captain, but as the PIO, when I was the public information officer, we had meetings monthly with all the PIOs, and we had it in the mayor's office. So I saw him on the regular then. He always remembered my name, always shook my hand. He was just a very cordial man, and he will be missed for sure.
Well, Sophia, you said it. If folks actually want to get more information on those funeral arrangements or visitations, anything like that, you can, shameless plug here for wobo.com, but you can log online there. We do have all of that information there, along with, you know, just a really great write-up, as we've all really paused to reflect over this last couple of weeks on just the legacy that Mayor Tom Henry will be leaving behind here and the impact that he had on our city of Fort Wayne. I do want to switch gears, Sophia, because we've got a really important topic of conversation as well to get to today. It's all about silver alerts, amber alerts, missing persons alerts. There's a lot of different emergency alerts that can go out there. But we just kind of had a situation of this here in our area. So I thought it was really important that we kind of break down and differentiate some of these alerts, how they're issued, when they're issued, the criteria to be issuing them, which is obviously where you come in today.
Yes.
But for starters, what did we have recently here? Was an amber alert or no amber alert? What happened as of recently?
So the week of March 25th, it would have been a Monday, actually, we had a couple of reports that came in the afternoon hours around 4 and 4:30. We had reports of an attempted kidnapping. And it happened in the southeast side of town.
Which is your quadrant,
which is
right?
My quadrant, yes. So what had happened was we had reports that there was a white work van that a male that was in. He was probably in his middle to upper 40s, bald head, beard, male white. He was wearing a white shirt and joggers at the time, but he had pulled up after this young female had gotten off the school bus, and he tried to grab her. He opened up the side door, tried to grab her. He actually got a hold of her arm. She started screaming, and then other people that were around actually started screaming too and telling, "What are you doing?" and kind of just really aware of what was going on.
Thank
God. And it spooked him. He let go of her arm, closed the door, and took off. Shortly, about a half an hour later, we had the same report with the same kind of description that male white, bald beard. This one had a little bit more to it. This one said he had it was a transit kind of minivan with rust on it, and it had plastic on the front passenger window, and that it had no windows anywhere else on the van, no rear windows, no side windows, just those two front windows and the windshield. But there was plastic over the passenger side. So no roof rack, no ladders, no nothing. So that was a lot more descriptive on that account. But same thing happened. He pulled up. There was a sibling group walking a dog, and he'd pulled up, and he made contact with the younger male, and he tried to lure him to the car. And the young man started going that way until his sister yelled out for him. And according to the sister, he was in about an arm's length away from the man before she screamed at him to stop. And she started screaming. And the guy closed the door and took off. So on two occasions, he was spooked off by just people yelling. We have not found this person. We had a lot of tips that came in. We have officers that are still engaged and actively seeking this person. We've had a lot of tips that have come in, and we're actively tracking those now, but it's been over a week now. But we're still looking for that. I just contacted the detective bureau before I came on to see if they had anything further. And they're like, they have two detectives on it. They're looking at a lot of things in the area, a lot of footage, a lot of video, and they're trying to decipher if they can figure out who this person was. So we're still actively looking for tips if anybody has those or may think that they know who this person is. Just, you can call Crime Stoppers too. That's the easiest way.
What's the number for that?
The number is 436-STOP. 436-STOP.
So that's 436-7867 if anyone has any tips to pass along. But in that scenario though, Sophia, obviously you wouldn't have issued an Amber Alert, right? There would be no cause?
No, there actually has to be an active kidnapping or substantial evidence of a kidnapping for an Amber Alert to go out. So so then when that happened, I thought, well, this would probably be a good topic for the show, because I thought about Amber Alerts, and then I thought about Silver Alerts. I'm like, well, that's a lot of information. I think it'd be very helpful to kind of go through those criteria, because people oftentimes get confused between the Amber Alert, between the Silver Alert. Why do we issue those and why don't we issue those? Because I get a lot of people that like, well, you know, my child's missing, there should be an Amber Alert. Okay, there's criteria, and it's not our criteria as the Fort Wayne Police Department. This is actually Amber Alert criteria. So all departments have to follow the stringent listing of things that have to be present before we can move forward with an Amber Alert.
Okay, well, let's just start simple first. What is the difference between an Amber Alert and a Silver Alert?
So an Amber Alert is an alert that goes out when there has been a kidnapping. There's other things that have to be present too, but the initial thing has to be a kidnapping.
And when you say kidnapping, you mean child 18 under, 17 under?
Under the age of 18, okay. Yes. And some other criteria that has to be there. So like I said, there has to be a reasonable belief an abduction has occurred. So I don't need full proof that it has, but just that it most likely has occurred.
So if someone, so let's say a parent calls the police, my child didn't come home after school. Do you have any idea where she's at? Oh, maybe she's at her boyfriend. There really isn't a belief then there that she's been kidnapped.
Correct. Okay. There has to be substantial things like someone saw someone throwing her into a van, or in terms like we did in Wells County, you know, someone did pull up and put her in a van, you know, so things like that. That would be the first criteria for the Amber Alert. The
second
is a reasonable belief the child is in imminent danger of bodily harm or death. So a lot of times there's custodial issues that don't necessarily tend to be, we don't think that they're in harm's way being with this parent. The parents never displayed any type of violence. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but it we don't know everyone's situation. And this could just be like someone's not home in time, or it's just, it's one of those things where we have to err on the side of our best judgment. And sometimes people don't like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to kind of balance that. But we do have things that, in just in our vast experience of these dealing with these situations, that we can determine whether or not a child is in imminent death.
Are there other criteria then, aside from those 2 points?
Yes. We have to have enough descriptive info about the victim and the abduction for us to conclude that an Amber Alert should be issued, meaning there has to be a car description, there has to be a person description, a child clothing, child description. We have to have all these things. The vehicle description is one of the primary things that they look for the Amber Alerts to go out. So, you know, you can't just put an Amber Alert out with just limited information, like this child's missing, but we don't know what car they're in. We don't know who they're with. We don't, you know.
Do you have to meet all of those criteria to send out? Oh, wow.
All of them.
I didn't know that.
And again, the child has to be under the age of 18. And, you know, you have to have the child's name and other critical data elements, including the child abduction flag, so it can be entered in the NCIC system.
How does that work then? Let's go back to maybe being a custodial issue here. Like, how does that work? I'm a mom. Oh, my husband, you know, we're divorced, whatever. He's taken our daughter. I know she's in serious danger. Here's the car and the make and model. But how do you know that you can believe me at face value that she's in serious danger?
Well, there has to be other things that you're going to bring to the table. Like there has to be threats, maybe via text, via letter, via statements that other people can corroborate. Because we know things can get contentious in divorces and people can say things or blow things up. But we need more substantial evidence than that. So if you have text messages or threats that they've made before when they've had the child, like I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill you. You know, people make all sorts of things. And people have that. They legitimately have that. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny that you say custodial issues, because I did look that stat up. And fathers and mothers are the most people abducting children. And the stat was from 2022. 2023s aren't up yet. 50 fathers and 31 mothers abducted their children. Amber Alerts were issued for their return. Unknowns, so, you know, these like just random grabbings accounted for 11 Amber Alerts. And this is nationwide.
This
is not just Indiana. This is nationwide. So most of these were custodial issues, 70, and domestics accounted for 17 of those.
Is it weird that those stats as a parent make me feel a little bit better? Because when you opened up talking about this strange man opening up the side of his van trying to, you know, grab kiddos walking down the street after getting off the school bus, of course that's alarming as a parent to hear that.
Yes, and I won't say that there's only been 11 instances where that's happened nationwide, but that there's only 11 Amber Alerts that went out regarding that.
That means all that criteria.
Yes, that met all the criteria. And so in 2023, 1,186 kids were rescued due to Amber Alerts.
Okay, I was going to ask that. What kind of success rate do we see?
Yeah,
from
that's
alerts?
Super high. 165 of those rescued were because of the wireless emergency alerts. So those messages you get on your phones that everybody wants to turn off because they're really annoying. Mm-hmm. Those were accounted for 165 rescue of children.
Wow.
Yeah.
Even if it's just one.
Yeah.
Send those alerts
out. It's
worth
it, right? Yeah. It's just a little annoyance. It scares the bejesus out of you, you know, where you are. But
so now explain this to me. Let's say it's you, because it's your Southeast quadrant. You're the officer collecting all the facts for this data for this Amber Alert. Then do you have to take it to your captain or to the chief? Like, who actually says, all right, let's make the call to get the Amber Alert to go out?
Yeah, so the sergeants on scene or the duty officer, which would be the lieutenant, they make the determination if we've met the criteria set there. Then we call dispatch. Dispatch then calls the state police. State police are the ones that enter those into the system.
Okay.
So they make the determination if this passes everything. And so Amber Alerts can go nationwide. they can go across state lines and things like that. So you'll see sometimes the Amber Alerts come out from Michigan, Ohio, things like that, because they may be passing through Indiana. You'll also see Amber Alerts go up on the DOT signs as you're driving down the highways, you know, Amber Alert, look out for this and that. And people in the highways have been incredible because they, man, they're like the PIs of our extra eyes because, I mean, we can't be everywhere. There's right. just not enough of us. So when those people are driving, they see these cars and, man, I mean, people are very helpful and they'll call in and lots of kids have been rescued that way just from people driving on the highway.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So back to, you know, we all get the alerts on our phones from them, which I get it. They're loud. They're obnoxious. They're kind of, when you first hear them, usually kind of frightening, startle you a little bit.
Yeah.
People don't need to sign up for these Amber Alerts. They're going to come to our phones no matter what, right?
Yeah, you have to actually go in and turn it off. Okay. So they're automatically defaulted to on. So if you don't want them, you can turn them off. But I highly, you know, I ask that you don't because they're very helpful for us. But if you want more information on Amber Alerts and just really get in the nitty gritty, it's amberalert.ojp.gov. And I just want to mention this because we haven't always had this Amber Alert. It actually stands for America's Missing Broadband Emergency Response. That's what Amber
okay,
stands for. Okay,
so I was going to ask you that too, and I just assumed that a young girl named Amber is,
well,
you know, oh, okay.
Funny you mentioned that okay. because there was a young girl named Amber. So the whole Amber Alert system is based on a 9-year-old Amber Hagerman who was kidnapped while riding her bike in Arlington, Texas. She was brutally murdered in 1996. I don't know actually when, but the law started in 1996
okay.
as an early warning because they had all this information, but there was no way to get it out. To everyone.
Yeah,
in a very easy manner.
What's the acronym? What's it stand for again?
America's Missing Broadband Emergency Response, but it is based on Amber Hagerman.
Is there ever an update then that's get sent? Let's go more to the positive side here. You know, we recover the kids, we find the kid after the Amber Alert was sent out. Is there an update that gets followed up that, you know, little Jimmy was found safely?
If the Amber Alert came from, like, the Fort Wayne Police Department and that person was found, we would issue, and that would not come out on an Amber Alert. That would come out through the local media.
Okay, because I feel like I have seen those as well, but I didn't know where those were actually coming
now,
from.
Yeah, so it all comes from media. We'll do a media release that
gotcha.
this child's been found safe. Hopefully that's the case if that happens. Unfortunately, we know a lot of times that these children do end up... Yeah. In a bad way.
On a completely unrelated note, but kind of related, has anyone accidentally sent one out maybe when they weren't supposed to?
No.
Oh.
Because the criteria is so stringent,
that's great.
They would stop that before it even happened.
I don't know if it was like, oops, accidentally sent out that alert and we weren't supposed to. Okay, so that's an Amber Alert.
Amber Alert.
And then there's also Silver Alerts. Personally, I think they're easy to remember the difference, but even I genuinely always thought it was, oh, probably some girl named Amber. You know, that's how I can remember it's for the one for kids,
yes.
18 and under. So
yes.
Tell us, what's a silver alert?
So a silver alert is basically, that's an alert for Indiana only. This is not a nationwide alert. But we had issues with missing persons that had medical diagnoses or mental health diagnoses that would have spelled disaster if someone was long-term missing without being found.
Mm-hmm.
But we had no way of actually putting that information out in a way other than just to local media. But we all know, you know, these towns and sometimes people are transitory. So a lot of these silver alerts, and they're silver alerts because they really had started out for our aged mm-hmm. population, hence the silver for the silver hair. But a lot of these people have dementia or Alzheimer's, and they would get in cars and they would just start driving and no one knew where they were. They couldn't find them, those kinds of things.
But technically, it could be used for a 25-year-old.
It could be used for anyone
right, okay.
that has a medical diagnosis that would be harmful if they're missing for
yes,
any prolonged
okay.
period of time. A lot of times, those things involve medications or that they need to have in a timely manner to keep them healthy. Or it ends up with a dementia, Alzheimer's, things like that, that just could end up bad because they don't know that they're going to freeze to death if they stay right. out in the cold or they, you know, so the silver alert was invented for Indiana. So, but those also have criteria I know it looks like we put them out all the time, but we really don't because there's stringent criteria for this as well. So the criteria for this is that the person must be a missing endangered adult, or you could do a missing endangered child or high risk missing person or have a medical impairment validated through a credible medical authority, meaning a physician, physician's assistant, or nurse practitioner. This before we can issue this alert, it has to be signed off on by a medical person that they legitimately have this going on. It's not just the parent saying they do. It actually has to be backed by a medical professional, and they have to sign the form.
I didn't know that part to it.
Yeah, so that becomes a problem sometimes if people don't have a doctor that they see regularly. Mm-hmm. We have a hard time getting something signed, so then no silver alert can be issued. Is a requirement of this.
Is that the same process? Your sergeant then goes to...
Yes, the sergeant then handles that, or lieutenant.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
There must be enough descriptive information to believe the broadcast will actually help. So if you haven't seen this person for 3 days, don't know anything of what they're wearing, any vehicle that they're in, and...
can't do much.
There's not much we can do. The request must be recommended by the law enforcement agency of jurisdiction. So we would have to actually put this forward. You can't go do this on your own.
Right.
It has to come through us. And then we have to enter the person into the IDAC's NCI system.
So definitely a big takeaway, because I'm going to be honest with you, Sophia, you're right. It does seem like that there are frequent silver alerts issued.
Yeah. And we know the problem with that, right? If we keep getting them, then people just ignore them.
Right.
And that's kind of why I think why we have the criteria that's so stringent, because we just can't do them all the time, because then people will shut it off and just not.
Well, and this was, that's really good for me. I work in the media, so I see them and I can tend to become rather numb to them when they come down the pipeline. And you're right, because there does at least feel like there are quite a few of them. But knowing that criteria, I knew there was criteria. I didn't exactly know what it was, but knowing that, hey, like a medical personnel has to sign off on this.
Yeah.
To me, that really gives these a lot more weight than even I think that I was giving them.
Yeah, and I think people get confused because they think, you just don't want to put the Amber Alert up for my child. I'm like, okay, no, this is an Amber Alert situation.
Yeah.
Your child running away from home or going to be with friends instead of coming home when they should is not an Amber Alert. It really is, and those I feel are very serious, because if you're putting an Amber Alert out, it's very a dangerous situation for the child involved. And I think we should take those very seriously when they come across our phones. And luckily, they don't come across with any great frequency.
Yeah. So then what's the difference? I mean, we discussed an Amber Alert, a Silver Alert, but I've also seen a missing persons alert. How does that fit in?
It's not on anything official. There's no like state mandate or state criteria that goes on for that. Sometimes if we feel like we can't really differentiate if this is actual runaway or something happened, but it doesn't meet that criteria, we may put that out. But we generally don't do that a whole lot, because then we get into the thing, well, why aren't you putting that for my child? And why are you putting that for this child? And I'm like, so we generally don't put out. We do have a missing persons page for the Fort Wayne Police Department on our website. So you can go there and see all of our active missing persons there.
Is it the same, you know, for an Amber Alert, you recommended, you know, calling Crime Stoppers. Is it same for a Silver Alert and or a missing person?
Usually there's a phone number associated with both of those notices that go out, like call this number. And if that's then just look at the line and call the number that's recommended at the bottom. But you can certainly call Crime Stoppers, although no one mans that actively. Usually if it's an Amber Alert and you have information, you probably should be on the line with 911.
ASAP. When it comes to a parent, a guardian, what have you, thinking, oh, man, my child was supposed to be home. They're not. You know, at what point do you say pick up the phone? Or again, my grandfather who has dementia, who, you know, his shoes are still here, but his car's not. You know, like at what point is it, I don't know, deemed appropriate to pick up the phone and call the police?
Immediately. I want to dispel the myth that your person has to be missing for 24 hours before the police will
Good.
Come out
Thank
and do
you.
Anything. That
Thank
is
you.
A myth. I don't even know where that came from. But as long as I've been a police officer, and that's been for a long time, it has always been, if they're not home when they're supposed to be home, you can call us and we can issue a missing persons report. Now, understand, we do not have the manpower to actively go out and look for missing persons unless there is something else going on. We may, if you have information that, hey, my kids run away again, you can do a missing persons report. And if you know where they may be, we may, if we're not like swamped, we may go over to the house and see if they're there. Check
Interesting.
If they're there.
So just real quick, sorry, sidebar. So if you think your kid, or maybe you even know your kid ran away, they might have left a note. Mom, Dad, I ran away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can still file a missing.
Yes. And do that immediately. There's no harm in doing it. If they come back home and everything's kosher and you're going to handle that, just go ahead and handle it. Just call us and let us know they're back home. We'll just cancel the report. The report does go into our computer system. So if we pull a traffic stop and we are running the people inside that car and that person comes back as, oh, you're an active missing, you're a runaway, they can be taken down to ACJC.
Okay.
Allen County Juvenile Justice Center, and processed as a runaway. It's a status offense. It's not a criminal offense. So we have a lot of that. We have a lot of kids that just are perpetual runners. So they don't like what's going on at home, or they don't like the rules, or whatever excuse there is. They'll constantly run away, so their parents are constantly filing runaway reports. If they make it home, we normally don't take them to ACJC unless they're on probation for a previous status offense.
That'll make sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can only do so much at times.
Well, I'm glad you dispelled the 24-hour myth.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
It drives me crazy, too.
24 hours. I'm like, where did that ever come from?
I'm also, you know, again, I thought I had a really good grasp on Amber Alerts and Silver Alerts. Not that I don't, but I'm so glad that you shared the criteria, especially for those Silver Alerts, knowing that if these alerts are going out, they're immediate, they're important. Don't turn them off on your phone. You know, keep them on. They're there for a reason.
Yeah. One day it's going to be our parents, right? One day it might be my parent. One day it might be your parent. And I would hope that people would be on the lookout and just try to help. I mean, we need to take care of our elderly people. We need to take care of our kids who possibly can't, through mental incapacities, take care of themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that's our duty as responsible people and responsible citizens.
Well, I definitely learned a lot today. If you want to learn more about the Fort Wayne Police Department and law enforcement in general, definitely download the Unholstered podcast wherever you download a podcast. Your town, your team, your topics. This is Unholstered.
Thanks for listening to Unholstered. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Unholstered.
Podcasts by Federated Media.